Next up, we'll have Jay Bryan, and it's a pleasure to have Jay. Jay is the person responsible for the title of Poet Laureate. It was his idea. How many, was it 3 years ago? 3 years ago. So I think this is the sort of genesis of why this festival is here, because it all kind of started with the idea of Carrboro having a Poet Laureate and representing Carrboro's very strong interests in the arts as a community. And I think the attendance here reflects that interest, and so I'm really happy to have you all here. But first, before we continue, I want to thank somebody that I didn't thank yesterday, and I should have, my good friend Alex Verhoeven, who is running the sound and has done a magnificent job, and he's also running the lights. So thank you, Alex. We also have some coffee in the back from Open Eye Cafe, so please help yourselves. And I also want you to know that feel free to get up and pick and choose from the readings as we go on today. Feel comfortable to walk around and you know, these some extended readings here. And I also just ask, if you do have cell phones with the ringers on, if you can just turn the ringers off, that would be great. And so, anyway, I would like to introduce Jay Bryan. Jay, everybody give a warm welcome for Jay. Thank you.
And I just wanted to say how grateful I am to Patrick for all the tremendous work that he did to bring this off and when he's in school and expecting a child. And so thank you very much, Patrick.
Certainly. Appreciate it.
This first poem is set at lunchtime on a cattle drive in Montana. It's entitled, When I Give Kindness. We are lying under the cottonwood trees whose leaves are shaking in an afternoon breeze. And around us, among their gnarly trunks, stand Appaloosas and Paints, bays and mules, mares and geldings. Silent, breathing, their luminous brown eyes deep as springs, watching us for a signal. We give no signal. Our eyes are closed, the hint of sage in our noses, the shade drifts over us like a hand. They start to move on their own, one after another, until they are all running through the cottonwood trees and the shade and the afternoon sun, beating the earth with their hooves. Their brown eyes eclipsed in white, coming closer, then around us in a huge pulsing circle, tails and manes out, the grass and sod flying, running with the freedom that once was theirs on the plains of Montana. As we hold hands in sleep and nestle like spoons, letting them run without fear. When I give kindness to you, it is safe. Next poem is about Zeus, who is a royal standard poodle, and a gift that he gave to us the night we buried him. Zeus, your leap over Daryl's handmade walnut bed and burrowing low and long between us to be small, your bark still ringing in our ears, oh, joy, oh, walk, oh, start now, let's go, oh, now, yes, now. The glistening ponds of your amber-brown eyes beseeching us, worrying about us, knowing us, wise and excruciatingly sensitive, worshiping Windy every step she makes, and mountainous eyebrows which you arched, then rolled one to the other, before catching our hands gently, like those baby rabbits you brought to Arthur after their mother disappeared. Your massive kingly head buried between our thighs, seeking refuge from a harsh world as we massaged your mitten-sized ears. Your back end jitterbugging from scratches above your pom-pom tail and lifting friend father when you walked between his legs. Barrel-chested, walking stiff-legged like a jock, running swift and bounding like a deer. Oh, our giant heart of a dog, oh, dearest friend, soul of dog souls, who in one last farewell gesture of love brought us pregnant Suzette and daughter Nickel Kitten to comfort and love and to fill the hole you left. We miss you. Next poem is entitled Gift of a Stepmother, or Gifts of a Stepmother. Home-cooked meals on days of agitated depression. Conversation, whenever, whatever. An insight indirectly shared. Companionship, antidote to loneliness. And shopping together, queen for a day. Pets for showing and receiving affection without fear of its withdrawal. You have all my attention, love. Live spontaneously between memories and a present recognizably off-center. Indivisible nurturing, heart's assurance of hope. Mindfulness when your gift is not understood or offered hand not taken. Caring not to cross into replacement. God and her mother's promise of healing. Joking with her boyfriend, braiding her hair before her rehearsal dinner, loving her children someday, sharing tears, and laughter, good and hard, the shortest distance between the three of us. This next poem is, I can't even pronounce the name of the title, but it's Rhapsodiomancy. It means divination by means of verses. And it's it's to a friend of mine about our deceased spouses and what if we should meet them now. And my friend Alice's husband was named George. My wife was Carol. With George, perhaps it is a certain after-dinner wine or the song of a warbler hidden in the top of a sweet gum that shakes loose the bullet of his presence or memory. Perhaps it is a word like duende, page 270 of his pink dictionary, or a salty limerick in the New Yorker. I'll admit for me, I still find myself having to swallow the bitter root of not having said goodbye to Carol when so many times I say it every day. Goodbye him or her, and have a good weekend, and I love you, assuming and taking for granted a next time. It's movies like Ghosts and Truly, Madly, Deeply that still shove a hand down my throat and wrench loose the neatly folded grief and scatter it about. Or It's a Wonderful Life, which she gave me one Christmas when I didn't know anything. Also, suddenly, the thought on a country road or after a meal she could have easily fixed of our children alone with their own reminders wafting by of her animated telling of a story from her day and her lips on their foreheads. Good night. There is so much to tell and hear now. They know everything, George and Carol, don't you think? But each of us would pause now, wouldn't we, to let the other speak. I'd probably ask, after letting her go first, how I had done with her sudden handoff of our life together, having not seen myself as she has. Might she appear to Amanda and Taylor would be next. She and George would elbow each other at that. What about you, dear Alice? Their hands and ours would be transfusion enough to share all they know and witnessed. Enough to say, don't you think? Do not fear or fret. The road ahead is safe. Maybe George would arrive on a camel for old time's sake and hoist you aboard. We'd all laugh and love his unique and wonderful sense of humor and eat crackers and pate and sip wine on your porch and in view of your flowering dogwood and daffodils. I can hear some silence, too, but oh, how so different from the silence when you and I have spoken to them in the years preceding their departure. And oh, so different now, Sweet spouses singing in harmony, gentle hymns from the heart. No regrets, finally, nothing but appreciation. And never again, goodbye. And the last poem is about my father, who grew up going to a lake in Maine, and as did his father, and I did too. And he, with his brother, was very involved with saving about 35,000 acres around the lake for parks and so on. And he was a swimmer. It's entitled Toward the Sea. You start from Big Sandy after plugging your narrow ear canals and tightening those faded blue short trunks. The early lake is smoky gray, cut by black slivers and smooth as ice, except where a lone loon pokes its head through the sheen. And you wade out, crooked like a crane, across a field of rocks to an oasis of yellow sand and a spot of warm water. You stand there for a moment and look out. It is your lake, every inch and depth of it, each boulder and fish and wave and particle of sand, yours. Then, like a hollow log, your body slowly thumps the water and you disappear for a second. You pass the stream from Rainbow Pond, beavers once reduced to a trickle, where the tracks of moose and deer and even bear crowd the shore to drink. Looking down, glacial rocks fall away, tumorous, cavernous, shoved along from Madawaska and Chickamauga to this home. Slower than when you crossed Long Island Sound, your arms lift and stretch and pull, slow as a windmill, steady round the point and across the neck of Little Sandy. Memories breed in the mouth of its clear water, memories of times together with all to whom you've been a father, brother, son, uncle, grandfather, and friend. Your feet flutter faintly behind you, like cork to keep from sinking in the cool water. You advance effortlessly up the shadows of the shoreline, around to bluff ledges, your father Prof's dressing room, where you can see his feet and white body and sprinkle of hair floating out of sight of his seven children. You can feel his serenity as he closes his eyes and listens to the beat and breath of the lake, its timelessness and purity. He sees you and waves you on. And on you go into the middle expanse, a lone figure, not struggling like the bucks we've seen churning for Mouse Island, but turning calmly to breathe. Then head against it, giving the lake resuscitation with clear tongue air. The wind has shifted as it does, and new whitecaps are coming straight over you, kicking up as your bony fingers and arms plunge into them. Many a time we've come out of Little Sandy and its emerald green calm under the shadowy mystery of Bald Mountain and cozy shoreline, only to be met by a sea of white. You are remembering it is your lake, even when it is its meanest, and those on it are but broken branches floating to the fish hatchery. At a point in the middle, as sleepy-eyed togue swim in place deep beneath you, the shoreline finally begins to take shape, and our dock and cabin windows come into view, the birch trees and blueberry bushes. We are waiting there, the whole family, along with all who have known the soul of the lake you have preserved and protected. You are tired, finally, as you reach down and touch the shore rocks, red and orange in the afternoon sunlight. Tired, but glad you made the swim again, and that you are home. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay Bryan. That was great. Thank you.